This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's Paul Hamilton.
The way they played last night, they definitely would have come out on the top side. But, you know, Tampa Bay was, they were eager, they were hungry, and they wanted to make sure that they, that was Paul. They just put out the buffet.
On WGR.
Go ahead, Paul. You can go get a plate.
Oh. Okay. Oh, my.
So, yeah, oh. I thought they were great.
Sports Radio 550.
Paul Hamilton coming up from Columbus, where the Sabres play their second preseason game in as many nights tonight. We will have more football this hour, but we'll just get caught up on the Sabres. And while we wait for Paul, you followed this game closely, right?
Last night? I did, yeah. Yeah, I watched every minute of it.
In fact, every minute?
I did, really, yeah. Yeah, I don't think I got up and walked away while the action was happening. Streamed it on the old iPad and hung out with Dan and Rob. Yeah, it was, you know, just get a little taste, you know. It was fun. And they won the game. I mean, I don't really care how, you know, but they won it in overtime. It was a nice Eichel had a great shot in overtime to win it. All right. So it was fun. It was a fun watch.
Eichel, Skinner, Dahlin.
Yeah.
How about Pittsburgh?
Dahlin, nobody. Rust.
Paul Rust?
Rust. I think Rust was the biggest name in the Pittsburgh lineup. Am I right, Paul?
Yeah, Rust. Both their goalies had played for the Penguins, Jerry and DeSmith. Johnson, the veteran.
Jack,
defenseman, there's one other I think I'm missing.
Right.
But, yeah, it was basically a minor league team.
Yeah. It was not a real heavy NHL lineup. So
nice arena, though.
Oh, I love it. It's beautiful. Great college arena, great sight lines. The fans were into it, almost sold out. A few seats up top weren't filled, but it was just a really cool atmosphere.
So I don't know this exactly from the Oregon, just in case you're wondering, but I believe you're in Columbus for the Sabres and Blue Jackets tonight.
And no, Rob's playing the organ in my living room. Neither one of us decided to go, so yeah, that's Rob playing the organ in my living room.
That could have been right, yeah. I'm not sure it's even good, so. What's the plan for tonight, Paul?
A totally different lineup. Yoki Aryu's here, but he's here just in case somebody gets hurt in warm-up. So it's a completely different lineup. All the guys you did not see in the lineup yesterday will be playing, which means C.J. Smith will be with Mittelstadt and Reinhardt. I'm excited to see that line. I want to see what C.J. Smith can do. I personally think that he can be an NHL player, and I like that he's getting a chance with two of the better players to show what he can do. He had a good camp last year and didn't stick up with the Sabres. So, and people might be wondering, well, why is Olsson out there with Asplund and Olsson? That's because Johansson is not playing in either one of the first two games. He'll play later in the week. Johansson had been practicing with Asplund and Olsson, but since he's not in the game, they slid Olsson in there for that. So if fans are wondering, why is Olsson playing with two guys that are probably in Rochester? One guy's not even signed in Olsson. He's trying to get a contract. That's why.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Olsson was a development camp invite, right?
Yeah, he did really well in the prospects challenge. I liked him a lot. He had 3 points, I believe, in those games, and showed some offense and showed some defense too. I liked him the way he got back. He broke up some plays. He was a draft pick of the Anaheim Ducks. The Ducks chose not to sign him, so he could go back as an overage junior. He had 70 points last year in junior, but he's trying to get a contract, and at least he got noticed. They didn't know if they were going to invite him to camp or not, and they did give him an invite.
Couple things from last night that I think might be worth going over for players who are either new or that you might have some hopes for this year. Yoki Haru, you mentioned, is not going to play tonight, but he did play last night. And I think there was evidence of what there is to like about his game in the game last night. Like, good skater, real solid puck mover, made no mistake on the goal. That was nice. I'm pretty bullish on this guy.
I am too. He got a chance to kill some penalties too, and I thought did a pretty good job with that. I liked him for the most part in the Prospects Challenge. There were a couple of shifts now and then where that went south on him, but that's going to happen to anybody. But overall, I think he as advertised, you know, he's a guy that will get the puck out of the zone quickly and accurately, and that's what they need desperately. Is defensemen that can do that and don't get bogged down so they get wind up in their own zone for half the night. And it was the goal he scored was kind of neat too, because it was a 2-on-1 with Rodriguez, and I believe it was Sherry. I could be off on that, but if it was Sherry, he missed the 2-on-1, and then Rodriguez, it went right to him, but it was a bouncing puck. We had a wide open net, but they didn't stand there and get all upset, no, we missed it and everything. They just grabbed the puck again and started a cycle very quick around the boards. Bang, bang, bang. Yoki Haru saw it, came down the slot. The pass was perfect to him, and he put it away. So, you know, good recognition by him, but good job by the whole unit out there, including Yoki Haru, to keep the forecheck going and keep moving.
All right, Paul, who's going for Columbus? Like, is this a game where the Stars play at home or no? And who are the Stars anymore? Did they...
Well, I see Werenski's name is in the lineup. Dubinsky, Riley Nash.
Okay. Atkinson?
Korpisalo, the goaltender. Atkinson is not in the lineup. So Seth Jones.
I didn't want to
okay. Okay. Yeah, that's
Adam
a big
Clendenning,
name. Yeah.
The local kid. Yeah. He's playing.
Right. Some good names. Some good names.
Some pretty good. Sonny Milano is in the lineup. Zach Delpy, you know the.
Oh, sure.
Great Sabres trivia.
The former Sabre.
Right. Tank trivia.
Right, right, right.
Yeah, I'm thinking Panarin, you know, Bobrovsky.
Right, these
like
guys
that doesn't
are...
mean they don't have anybody.
Right, right.
Far from it.
Yeah. Hey, Paul, I'm sorry to jump around on you here. John Gilmore. This is not a guy we've talked a lot this summer. When we've talked hockey, it's been this glut of defensemen that they've got. And Gilmore, talk about a guy that can move. The goal he scored, I mean, he was shot out of a cannon.
He would give whoever you think the fastest skater is on the team a run for his money. I didn't realize, one, he was that fast. I knew he was fast, but I didn't realize he was that fast. And number two, I didn't realize how small he is.
Yeah.
Until I stood next to him to interview him after the game. I go, he's really tiny. But wow. I mean, it was a play that Sherry had on the wall, quickly got it up to VC, and VC looked up, and Gilmore was already in full gear behind the defense who had no chance at all. And he, you know, VC laid a perfect pass there. And the second good part of that goal is he wired it right under the crossbar. Now, I would like my goaltender to get out a little bit and make that save, but still, it was a great shot under the crossbar. He just zipped it there. But wow, I mean, it was just the speed that he showed on that and the recognition that here's a good play for me to jump in and did. So just from what I saw in other parts of his game, you know, he's a depth defenseman, but if Buffalo needs to use him because of injury, I don't think he's going to embarrass himself.
Will anybody be at this game? How many people will go to a Tuesday night preseason game in Columbus?
Well, right now, if there's 20 people in the building, but they just opened the doors 12 minutes ago, so there's not a lot of people in the building right now. I don't know. I have been here for preseason games, but I just don't remember how many people were here. I do see a couple of Sabre jerseys across the way.
My number is 6,000.
Ooh, that's high. Do you think players who aren't on the trip will watch this game on their phones and stuff, or will they just find out tomorrow how it went?
Some will. The younger ones probably will.
Teammates will text them how it went.
It depends what they got going. If they got something going, if they're going out to dinner or something like that, probably not. But if you're just sitting at home on the couch, you know, right. You've already DVR Dancing with the Stars or whatever else is on, and you're finished with that. I mean, yeah. You might watch the game.
I believe the America's Got Talent finale would be what we want for this this reference. That's tonight, I think.
Yeah, I saw that earlier on the news, because apparently we live in a world now where that qualifies as news. So
hey,
yeah, there you
we
go.
Absolutely do. Thank you, Paul. Enjoy your night.
Take care, guys.
The Sabres play Friday and Saturday after tonight's game.
There you go. That's Paul Hamilton and his reports with us here. You know, we're just getting revved up for hockey season with Paul. there on the Wester Hotline. His report was brought to you by Losi and Ganji, Buffalo's workers' comp attorneys, working hard for hardworking Western New Yorkers.
Revved up. I'm even, I think, pre-rev.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I'm like, maybe the car is on, but I'm not pushing. I'm not revving it yet. I'm not revving the engine yet.
You're just
yet.
Idling.
I've turned it on, I guess.
Yeah.
It gets turned on for me. Someone else turned it on.
Who turned? Yeah, okay.
Someone else turned it on.
All right.
You know, I'm in no rush for it. It's okay.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, I'm just.
I got nothing else going on tonight. I don't have to watch the waiver wire in fantasy or anything. I'm just going to go home and put this on the iPad and maybe even mirror it on the big TV because there's not a football game to watch. So I'm all good.
Tuesday and Wednesday nights are the busiest fantasy football nights for me. And I've also got two baseball teams I got to get home. Mm. Then we'll get to hockey. It'll fit right together. Baseball will end.
Mm-hmm.
Fantasy baseball will end, and hockey will start. I don't know about never, but I'm not playing fantasy hockey. Joe has a thing.
But fantasy hockey? Yeah.
Joe has a thing.
Yes, a Dynasty Empire Fantasy Hockey League.
Dynasty Empire Startup. I'm intrigued. That sounds pretty hot.
Tomorrow, I'm going to get here early, and I want you to tell me all about that.
All right, we'll do. I'll be ready.
I'm not going to do that.
I'm going to come with notes and everything.
All right.
Lots of interesting football news. Joe Marino is perfect for today. He does his Bills podcast, and he also is with the Draft Network. So we're going to talk about quarterbacks, including some of these guys that are going in for legends who are benched or hurt. Stay tuned. Then the Sabres tonight in Columbus. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog, WGR.
It's Mike Schoep.
I have these notes, but I got to say I'm just fired up to be here today.
And the Bulldog.
Pretty cool. Pretty damn cool. Woo!
On WGR. Sports Radio 550.
All right, there are a lot of fans around here who might sound like that these days. We're going to talk to Joe Marino now from the Draft Network and Locked On Bills on Twitter at the Joe Marino. That's what Twitter calls him. I like to think of him as G.I. Joe because he's from Grand Island, but I don't know. You shouldn't use a nickname, Joe, of someone that you don't have their approval, right? Like, you should have to sign off or get to sign off on that, I think. It's only fair.
Right. I should have at least had the courtesy to ask Ohio State if I can have V in front of my name on Twitter.
That too. All right. Well, we're talking with one of the most notable Grand Island football authorities, Brett Kern, by the way. Do you ever use that, Joe, that Brett Kern is from the island? Did you know that? Tennessee punter?
I didn't. No, that's good information. I'm glad to know that now.
All right, good. So, I mean, of course, here, Joe, 2-0. How impressed are you and how surprised are you?
I think the Bills did a good job of, I mean, obviously very impressive to start the season 2-0 with two road wins. Impressed, I think, is probably, that might be a strong word. I think encouraged is where I'm probably at, particularly with the growth of Josh Allen becoming a more complete quarterback. Showing the ability to work the football to the short and intermediate areas of the field.
Joe, you still there?
I'm really yes.
Yeah,
I
good.
Am.
I'm sorry.
Sorry, you clipped out for a second.
Yeah, you went away there for a little bit.
Sorry.
So, yeah, the encourage is the buzzword for me when it comes to this 2-0 start, particularly the performance of Josh Allen.
Yeah, the way that they've scored their points, Joe, is really something to me. They've had six touchdown drives, and they've all been 70 yards or more. There's a 98-yarder in there from Sunday. There's an 85-yarder, I think, in the Jet game. That's Josh Allen being precise and being accurate and, you know, piloting them on 10, 11, 13-play drives. And that's just not – I mean – I didn't expect that. I mean, completion percentage is 64, which is much better. It's still not like good for top half of the league because that stat just guys are better and better at it. But I think that's the most pleasant surprise so far is that they've gotten touchdowns and they haven't been on lightning strikes.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to substantiate the growth, right, is that the Bills are sustaining long touchdown drives and not relying so much on big plays where – towards the end of last season, it was Josh Allen throwing the ball down the field or him running it, either or. That's how they were matriculating the football. And now it's a lot more of Josh being in command of the offense and keeping it on schedule. A lot of really impressive third down throws, particularly in that Giants game towards the end. And that's really a good way to measure the growth of this football team. And just, you know, I've gotten a lot of questions as well about how that maybe has come at the expense of some big plays. But I think that's going to come. I am more encouraged by the growth of the team being more consistent on offense than I am discouraged by not seeing as many deep balls hit down the field like we came accustomed to seeing towards the end of the year last year.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think that that's just more sustainable, really needs to be the word here, probably.
All right, and you also probably can pretty reasonably expect that you're going to get some of those plays eventually out of Allen anyways.
No question, and obviously there's a timing component. You know, John Brown and Josh Allen have showed great chemistry so far with his, you know, first two games of the season, but we, you know, he missed a deep throw to him against the Giants, and a lot of people are talking about that. I think that timing piece of it will come, and you'll see those deep plays start to be hit. The interesting thing is the guy that was on the receiving end of those deep plays last year, Robert Foster, has been pretty much non-existent in the offense. And so it'd be interesting if the Bills could get them both going, perhaps on some vertical shots. But right now, John Brown and Josh Allen, they've got to get on the same page and get that timing down the field.
With Joe Marino here on WGR from Locked On Bills and also the Draft Network, Mike Schopen, the Bulldog, with you. So, Joe, we watched these two games on TV. And, you know, you see the Bills, you see Allen take the snap, and then he throws it, and a guy's open. And, you know, what are you supposed to think? One thing you're going to think is that Allen is doing better. He's reading the play right and delivering the ball accurately, like we're talking about. Another is the scheme here. And I feel like that might deserve a lot of credit. And then you have the opponents, you know, like the Giants made me wonder if they're just maybe really bad. So, you know, pick what you want there. I just think what more is really happening right now that accounts for how it's looked.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
I think I see a lot of comfort from Josh Allen pre-snap. And, you know, one thing that I picked up from a press conference that I was at actually this summer with David Cutcliffe, the head coach of Duke. Everyone knows him from his work with the Manning brothers and, of course, Daniel Jones. One thing he really got into was the difference between whether or not completion percentage was a measure of accuracy. And he really argued that completion percentage is more about pre-snap reads and understanding where to go with the football. And I think that's what I've seen from Josh is, more than anything, him being more comfortable with what he's seen pre-snap. Obviously, some of that comes from Brian Daboll and scheming some things up with some motions, moving Patrick DeMarco out wide in situations to create easy man zone reads. And then credit to Josh Allen for really putting that together and executing post-snap based on what he's learning pre-snap. So I think it is a combination of scheme and Josh Allen just becoming more comfortable. The game's slowing down for him, and he has a lot more comfort compared to what we saw last year.
Some of that has to be a product of him being the number one guy here through the spring and the summer, and like just and doing the work. You know, you got to do the work. Just being the number one guy isn't alone going to get it done, but it does a value of more attention from the coaches and certainly more opportunity to work on things in practice and get all those reps. So I think that's got to be at least one of the byproducts is that progress that he's done that work and he has some better idea what the heck he's looking at when he's standing there.
Well, there's no question, and the Bills have done so well to improve literally everything around him, whether it's an offensive line coach, quarterback coach, wide receiver coach, better personnel on offensive line, defense, and wide receiver. But in addition to, you know, Josh Allen being the guy from day one, and last year at this point in time, he had shared reps all offseason long with McCarron and Peterman, and arguably I think you can make a good case that the Bills didn't anticipate playing Josh Allen as soon as they did, and Nate Peterman just played so poorly they had to put him in the lineup. And so he's running Nate Peterman's offense for the first several games, and then finally he goes out of the lineup and comes back in, and you saw really the growth start to happen right then and there where there's just more comfort. And so that offseason meant a lot for Josh Allen in a lot of different ways.
Thank you for saying that. That is a point that I've made a lot. We heard all last year about the process, and once in a while, especially if I was in a mood, Joe, I'd be like, tell me again about what the process was here when Allen was supposed to play, because he, you know, they had the competition and everything, but you know what? it doesn't really ultimately matter. It's a happy accident, I guess, in a weird, twisted way that Peterman went down like that, just like it was one that Drew Bledsoe got hurt for the Patriots, you know? Like, just it happened that way. Dare I make that comparison? So if you look at the division, one way of looking at the division right now as you start to think playoffs maybe, Joe, is the AFC East is New England, which still looks like New England, the Bills, and two teams that are 20-point underdogs this week. Like, I don't know if you're an odds guy, but what kind of odds do you think there are on the Bills finishing at worst second this year already? Like, is this a sort of crazy leap to make this early?
Well, you certainly anticipate the Bills finishing higher than the Dolphins. I'd be surprised if they win a game this year, but the Jets have really been extremely unlucky. Now, I think they've had their own issues with some inopportune investments in their offensive line, and obviously hiring Adam Gase and Greg Williams is a very questionable hires, and so some of that's on themselves, but obviously their injury situation is very unlucky, and the Bills are playing well, and to their credit, I think the Bills are in the driver's seat to be the second-place team, and I mean, I think it's way too early to talk about contending with New England for the AFC East, but I don't think there's much of a case to be made for any other team besides the Bills that being number two in the AFC East right now.
Right.
Yeah, that is something here. I mean, the division, we'll see. You know, they'll play in a couple of weeks, and hopefully, the Bills will take care of business with the Bengals. I'd expect the Patriots to beat the Jets. I'm sorry, I can't even say it without laughing. But, you know, if the division is still closed off, that's fine. The way things are shaking out in the conference here, we got Roethlisberger's hurt and Luck retired. The Jets are without Darnold and already 0-2. The Browns, to me, don't look like what maybe we expected them to be. There's still a lot of time for them to wind into form, of course. Like the Chargers maybe are injured, and that's hurting them. Like, it feels like the door's opening a little bit in the conference.
I agree with you. And the one team that kind of comes up, you mentioned a lot of the teams that I think maybe not be what we thought they would be, but how about Baltimore as a team that, yeah, you know, looks like that's going to be a tough game for the Bills, especially with the speed that they have. And I'd argue that the Bills don't have great speed in their secondary, although they're a very good pass defense. And so, I think Baltimore is a team now on the flip side of that gives me some concern about what they could potentially be this year.
With Joe Marino on WGR, well, you've published for the Draft Network a draft board already, and I don't even know if in your world that constitutes already. Maybe of course I have, could be what you're thinking. It's September into the college season. But, you know, you said before you'd be surprised if Miami won a game, and I'm sure you recognize what that is to say, you know, after two games, because, you know, we've almost never had 0-16 just a couple times. Let's talk about that a little bit, and whether you think they're, you know, they've got other picks too, with the trade last night included. Like, how optimistic would you be for the Dolphins after this year?
Well, you know, I think the challenging thing with this Dolphins situation is obviously they've done a good job of creating draft capital, but they've also created a lot of holes, right? And part of these draft picks that they're going to turn around and use are going to be on players like Minka Fitzpatrick and like Laremy Tunsil. So, you know, and one hand, they're acquiring that capital, but at the same time, they're continuing to deplete their roster. A lot of picks, a lot of needs, you know, and it's very interesting because I think one thing that the Bills could kind of, you can look at the Bills example here over the last few years and really see that something that's been very important to what we believe is turning of the page here for the Bills is they have a veteran in every single room. And they've been very good to complement their young players with veterans around them. What's Miami's course to do that? You know, that's what's interesting to me. They're going to get all these young players, but is the infrastructure really going to be ripe to bring in a young rookie quarterback with the number one overall pick? Is there going to be enough meaningful veterans on this roster? I think it's a legitimate question because you can have all the young talent in the world, but if there's no example set by veterans in the room, it's going to become challenging. And this team has so many holes. They have a lot of cap space, but who's going to really be their marquee guys that they're going to be able to bring in there as veterans in free agency? We saw Jadeveon Clowney did not want to go there. And, you know, Trey Flowers picked Detroit, and their own players went out of the building. So it's exciting to see them acquire some draft capital, but they're a long ways away, and I'm not sure how quickly this thing gets turned around.
Yeah, I mean, it's great. I mean, they did great to get the picks that they got in the Tunsil trade and now the Minka Fitzpatrick trade, but those players are still young enough to me that they'd be guys you'd want on your team when when you draft Tua or whomever to be your quarterback. And those are very curious moves, I think.
Yeah, and it's, it goes back to they're going to bring in a young quarterback. We've seen guys like Josh Rosen go into that Arizona situation. It was just so bad around him that Josh Rosen's really set back in his growth. And, you know, other quarterbacks are just going, Derek Carr with Houston when he first came out. You can't just introduce your young quarterback, as talented as they are, to a situation where they're just set up to fail. And so they got a lot of work ahead of them. And I'd be concerned that they can get the right mix of veterans to complement the rookies and young players to get this thing on track like they hope. So we'll see. They got to make these picks count. But I'm curious about where they're going to get the veterans to complement the rest of the roster.
Joe Marino from the Draft Network here on the Western Hotline with us. How about the other end of that Minka Fitzpatrick trade, that it's the Steelers that go get him? With Roethlisberger out for the year, they cough up a first-round pick, which, you know, without their quarterback, could be tracking towards a first-round pick. That leads you to Mason Rudolph. What did you think of him coming out, and did you look at what he did on Sunday? Is it possible that the Steelers could salvage the year here with him playing quarterback for them?
Yeah, it's curious, right? An 0-2 team that just lost a starting quarterback traded away their next year's first-round pick. And I think it'd be the first time in 57 years the Steelers didn't have a first-round pick. It's very, very different for them. I think this is, if anything, a real sign that they have some belief in Mason Rudolph to be that guy, and some confidence there, and some digging that I've been able to do over the last 24 hours or so has led me to believe that they believe in Mason Rudolph, and so that's kind of the interesting layer here. As far as my opinion of Rudolph coming out is, I thought he's a guy that had a chance to be a starter. I graded him as a day two prospect, a late day two prospect, and you saw a player that has some tools. He has decent enough arm talent. He has good ability to work the football down the field and hit spot throws. But, you know, it was a big jump from him coming out of the air raid system there at Oklahoma State to an NFL offense. And then you saw him struggle last year in the preseason. You really didn't get a lot of confidence that he could be the guy. But then this year in preseason, it felt like you were watching a different player. And so maybe some of that growth, and obviously before Ben went down, they traded Josh Dobbs. So they knew when they traded Josh Dobbs that they were a snap away from this being their circumstance, and they were comfortable with it, and now it's here. So I'm anxious to see how he does, and I think he has a chance. I don't think he has a high ceiling, but I think he has a chance.
Joe, one more thing maybe. So, of course, we have, five or six of these quarterbacks the three of us have talked about leading into drafts in the last couple of years that are going in. Luke Falk is now starting. Daniel Jones, of course. Gardner Minshew, is maybe even good. Whatever happens in Carolina, there's two guys to pick from where you are in Carolina. Like, you have one of these names, maybe including Rudolph, perhaps. I mean, that might be appropriate. One of these names that you're, like, the most curious or excited about, and maybe one where you just have the least hope?
I'll tell you, I don't get excited about too many of those names at all. But I like the situation for Rudolph. I will say that. Pittsburgh has one of the best offensive lines in football, and that matters a lot, right? They have a Pro Bowl running back in James Conner. They have a Pro Bowl receiver in Juju Smith-Schuster and some other young receivers that they've drafted recently. And they also have Vance McDonald, who's a quality tight end. And they also had a top-six defense last year that got a lot of pressure on the quarterback with some pieces there that are going to make that unit better, potentially with Devin Bush and Steven Nelson and now Minka Fitzpatrick. So I like the makeup of that roster enough for that infrastructure to be good enough around Mason for him to succeed. On the flip side of that, you asked me for the one I'm least excited about. That would be Luke Falk. Luke Falk with the Jets, who I really thought he was a very limited player coming out of Washington State. I didn't think he had really the baseline traits that you're looking for. I know he's a smart guy, right? But, smart guys wind up being offensive coordinators like Kellen Moore, or then they are starting quarterbacks in the NFL. I don't know that he has the baseline physical skill set to really give them much, and obviously I'm pretty down on Adam Gase and his scheme.
No question it was time to do something with the Giants. Are you optimistic for Daniel Jones based on his preseason, or do you just sort of throw that out?
I hope so. I'm rooting for Daniel Jones. I got a chance to spend a good amount of time with him up at Duke. I've done probably five or six of his games over the last 2 years. I obviously saw him at the Senior Bowl he's a good guy. He loves football. He's a good person. He works really hard. And he you know, there's a lot of criticism towards the Giants for that pick. And, you know, I think feel like some of that's been miscast towards Daniel Jones. And there's a lot of venom towards Gettleman in that situation. But, you know, Daniel Jones doesn't deserve any of that. And you know, he's the guy that has a chance to be at least a quality starter in the NFL. I don't know that he has the physical tools to really be a plus starter, but can he be an Andy Dalton or a Kirk Cousins type quarterback? I certainly think that he can. And obviously the dynamics of that situation kind of makes me root for him to succeed.
All right. Great to talk to you again, Joe. Any questions for us today?
I should have known you were going to ask me that, but I don't have any questions for you this time. But
all right.
Thanks for much. Always a good conversation with you guys.
Thanks to Joe Marino of Grand Island for his time, as always. Sabres hockey is next. Mike Schoep and the Bulldogs. See you tomorrow at 3 here on WGR.
And tomorrow starts the same old thing again. And tomorrow starts the same old thing again.
Gentlemen, be free.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.